Greetings, fine gentlemen. A happy Tuesday to all of you. I praise God. Bassist, guitarist. Welcome, fine sir. I actually listened to you shred for a little bit. It was quite impressive. Very enjoyable. Very bassist. Scotch Cuban, welcome, fine sir. It's wonderful to have you gentlemen on. And praise God, man. I hope you guys all had a wonderful Easter. So, gentlemen, I thought we would have a really fun one. We'll chat around a whole bunch of topics today. We shall chat about the dreaded misogyny, the dreaded racism, the dreaded, whatever other dreaded things, the taboo topics of our generation, the politically incorrect of our generation. I was really thinking a lot on this all-male space pub, the pub, the beer hall, where all great ideas are advanced. You know, what is university? Why did the big brains all go to university? You know, this is talking ideally back in the past when universities or monasteries or seminaries or whatever you'd want to call them. It was a bunch of bros saying, let's all live together so that we can talk about taboo things, and let's talk until 4 a.m. in the morning while surrounded by a bunch of bros, and we just talk about big brain topics. And then you get these big brains writing huge books, and their ideas are being challenged, and they're pushing things. You know, you get this Martin Luther chap. Let me tell you, many people wanted to kill that guy. They wanted to cancel that bugger, let me tell you. Exactly that kind of principle. You have a bunch of bros who are not concerned with feminine safety, feminine security, feminine moderation. Let's not offend the ladies in the room. Let's not, because ladies are very concerned with safety, with social safety, especially. You know, social safety, the primal tribal genetic memory. You know, if a lady gets ejected from the tribe, she dies. If a lady gets ejected from the group, she dies. Whereas a man, if a man gets ejected from the group, it's like, bloody go make another group. Screw you guys. I'm going to go make my own group. For a guy, it's all about your competency, your bravery, your strength can allow you to exist without the group until you make another group. Your authority, your God-given patriarchal authority, duty, allows you to start another group. You know, your family you are sovereign over your family group. You are sovereign over your institutions that you start. Whereas for ladies, it's always an appeal to patriarchy. That's the natural law that God created. It's the natural way, is that ladies are always going to be appealing to the strongest man in their life. You know, so you have all these boss babes, you have all these media babes, you have all these ministry babes, but the moment they, because they all come into the masculine space, the masculine environment, where you have to contend with hostile forces. You have to contend with groups whose interests are not your interests. That is leadership. That is whatever domain you're in. If you step into leadership, you are there to contend, to compete on behalf of your tribe, on behalf of your family, your institutions. That is the role of leadership. That is the role of the patriarch, is to contend with other groups to make sure your group's interests are taken care of. So you get these boss babes, ministry babes, media babes, and guys start coming at them, right? Guys start stealing their stuff and calling them names. And that's bloody, it's unkind. It's not very kind, guys. And so what these ladies do is, instead of standing on their, you know, if a guy gets punched in the face, it's like, well, reciprocity, I'm going to punch you in the face. Whereas what the ladies do is they cry. They cry to other men, higher status men if they can, to come and punch this guy in the face. There's an appeal to authority to come and punch this guy in the face. Now, in our modern world, that's the government. In our modern world, that's the institutional government. You know, so like in a church, like, oh, you cry to the elders, or you cry to the pastor to get this guy kicked out of the church. You cry to the editorial board to get this guy kicked out of the media company. You cry to the ADL to get this guy doxed and canceled or whatever. There's always an appeal to authority to come and do the violence on their behalf. And men love doing violence on behalf of their woman. You know, that is, again, the patriarchal natural law, right? Is for your wife, like, you would kill to protect your wife. You would kill to protect your wife's interests, your children's interests. It's the natural patriarchal desire to provide, protect, promote your group, your institution, your people. And so these ladies play on that. And that's also when you get the white knight, right? So if they can't get someone above them in status, if they can't get someone above them in authority to come in and act on their behalf, they then get everyone below them in the hierarchy or in status to come to their defense. That's the white knight, right? So that's why you get, especially online, you get all of these men who ride in as a white knight to save my lady, my lady's honor, my lady's dignity. How dare you besmirch my lady's honor? How dare you contend with my lady? The reason they do this is that they think that they will be rewarded by the lady. Now, what is the ultimate reward of a lady? Is her beauty, her sexual market value, her feminine energy. And that's impossible on you know, hypergamy and sexual dynamics. Competition make it impossible for a man of lower status to receive a woman of higher status to ever receive that. You know, women want Captain America. Women want the man to be more higher status than them before they will give that man their sexual energy, their feminine energy, their gift as a woman. So these white knights are in perpetual, they are in perpetual give without ever receiving. And they can get very resentful of higher status men who do receive the gift, who do have a wonderful wife and family, who do have higher status and command respect from other people and other ladies. There's an incredible resentment there. And so what you see is that these boss babes, media babes, ministry babes play on the resentment of lower status men to destroy higher status men who contend with them or disagree with them or won't give them attention or the time of day. So all of this is a long rant. We will read what we wrote about on Twitter. Drongo, university has done the full monastery to nightclub. Transformation. That's very good. Yeah, you know, it's it is this whole thing of a bunch of bros went to university to read books together and have debates until 4 a.m. And then you introduce some ladies. Now it's a bunch of bros go to university to bang girls until 4 a.m. There's no high intellectual achievement of civilizational philosophy coming out of the nightclubs at 4 a.m. You know, it's indentured sex slaves servicing the needs of the 20% of highest value men at the university. And then the other 80% of men are just there to be indebted and hope that they can sleep with the indentured sex slaves. Scotch Cuban, I deleted all the women I followed on Twitter. The feed and banter is amazing now. Yeah, praise God, brother. You know, it's a great principle. You know, back in the day, when I was a young Luddite, I managed to get onto the forums of the Manosphere. You know, all these anonymous chat forums and stuff. It was a wealth of experiences and taboo ideas and things like that. It was the last frontier of the all-male space. And they had this pithy saying that they would always, you know, bring out. Because invariably what would happen on these anonymous chat forums is some commenter would say, well, as a lady, and then put their experience or their idea. And all the dudes would just be like, no, there are no women on the internet. This is an anonymous chat room. We're not going to treat you nicely because you claim to be a lady. We're not going to pretend to be nice to you because we think we can get sex from you. This is literally an anonymous chat room. We will never get anything from you. There are no women on the internet. And, you know, so what they meant by that is that anonymity, anonymous all male spaces are all about the mission, are all about the idea, are all about the danger of men trying to achieve the mission to get honor amongst all the other men. How do you, you know, in a chat room where it's all about ideas, well, the guy who brings the most risky, spicy idea gets the most likes. The guy who brings the most big brain take gets the most likes. The guy who brings the most adventurous, crazy story gets the most likes. It's all about the masculine honor for bravery, strength, and courage online. Now, what happens with ladies when they come in, you know, they're like, well, you know, you look at any hobby, right? I especially deplore, is that the right word? I have a disdain. It disgusts me. Is women coming into male sports, right? You have an all-male space where all the guys can be free with each other, can be honest, can be brutally honest. You know, iron sharpens iron. Can be brutally honest with each other. And it comes across to many ladies as uncaring and mean and, you know, all this stuff. But a lady will go into that hobby space, that all-male space. You know, pick your hobby. It could be radio-controlled boat races. It's going to be 99% guys, but there'll be like one girl who shows up because she knows that by being the only girl there, she'll garner all the attention of these men. She will feel the power of introducing sexual competition, of introducing a sexual availability into an all-male space. You know, the army guys that I talk to all tell me about this phenomenon called the Desert 10. And it's where these dudes are out stuck in the middle of some godforsaken desert with like, you know, 1,000 men on base. And there'll be like 4 army women on the base. And it's like those women have a captive economy. They have a monopoly over the economy. They are Desert 10s. Because they are the only woman in this all-male space. And so they get attention, they introduce sexual competition, they introduce all of the dysfunction that comes from taking the mission primacy of an all-male space away and now making it a sexual competition primacy. You know, it's the same thing that guys say with like co-ed schooling. You know, I went to a co-ed school where there was boys and girls mixed in the school. And what so many people say is like, if you go to a boys-only school, the boys aren't afraid to ask stupid questions, make a fool of themselves. The teachers aren't afraid to absolutely belt those young lads. Let me tell you, there's discipline issues. We sort things out here. But you at a co-ed school, you know, the guys don't say anything because they don't. Like, you want to be in the top 10 of absolute Chinese mathematicians because you will get honor from the other Chinese mathematicians. You know, whereas in a co-ed school, it's like, well, that's not cool. I need to not try hard because I need to be cool for the girls. None of these dynamics leave us as we get older. You know, you see some dude who's leading a church, you think he's going to be honest from the pulpit and be an absolute Chad. And it's like, well, no, there's actually ladies in the audience that I don't want to offend because it's very important to me that I get approval from the ladies. It doesn't change. Nothing changes. And so to go back to what you were saying there, Scott Cuban, when it comes to Twitter, to YouTube, all the stuff, you know, like obviously ladies read my stuff on Twitter. Ladies can watch these YouTubes or listen to these podcasts. You know, that's fine. But the moment I start talking to a female audience, you know, I have to tone things down. I have to temper and moderate. I have to become a little bit more correct and kind and all this kind of stuff. And then it's like, why listen to me? Why listen to me? You know, why do we listen to this milquetoast centrist? It's not about safety. It's about danger, right? We want to, all the guys we want to listen to and read their stuff, it's because they are on the edge of the acceptable window. You know, like, whoa, no ways. He said the thing, you know. He named the name. He pushed the push. You know, we love bravery in our leaders. You know, we want hope, right? We want a positive vision, which a lot of priestly boys give. They give a positive vision. They give hope. But bravery is the real thing that people want to follow. You know, it's the reason why everyone wants to go to Florida is because based King DeSantis, he's brave, right? They come out, the ADL comes after him, CNN comes after him, and he doesn't fold. That's bravery. It's the reason why everyone, you know, name your pastor that was locked up during COVID. It's like, I want to be in a church where the pastor is locked up for COVID because that guy's got balls. He's based. We want bravery from our leaders. You know, now whether that's in the ministry domain, the media domain, academia domain, economy, government, it doesn't matter. If a man is higher authority than us, we want him to be brave for our interests. We want him to advance bravely our interests. And so when it comes to, you know, to your domain, you cannot perform your work, you cannot perform your duties with the safety and security of woman as your main value. You know, obviously the benefits of it are for the woman in your life, the safety and security of the woman in your life. But when it comes to contending at the gate, when it comes to giving your gift, when it comes to absolutely crushing the clowns, you can't be like, well, I hope this doesn't offend anyone. I hope, you know, because again, and we'll read some tweets that were, some guys are sharing, which are really good. But like, at the end of the day, if someone comes and calls you a racist is just a slur for a white man. And I was thinking about it some more. Like, obviously, every white man is racist. You know, even the allies, even the sad, self-flagellating liberal whites are still racist, right? They're still racist because they're still white. But I was going more into it. I was like, the ones who they're really afraid of are whites who are unapologetic after pursuing their interests, right? White people have interests. So if you're unapologetically pursuing your interests, they're going to scream racist and all this kind of stuff. Now, if you want your culture to honor the Lord, if you want to love your people, to love your place, you know, you're going to have to advocate for the interests of your people, of your place. Now, if you are white, that means white interests, you know, a white family, a white church, a white town, a white tribe, a white economy. Like, if you live around white people and they are your people, you're going to be called a racist for pursuing the interests of your people. You know, and I always say to people, invert it. You know, if a bunch of African black guys pursued the interests for their family, God bless them. Pursued interests for their black family, their black church, their black neighborhood, their black economy, their black tribe, their black institutions, their black government. And they were like, we love our people. We love our place. We are pursuing the interests of our people and our place above those of others. Everyone would be like, oh, God bless. God bless. More power to you, brother. There's no problem. There's no problem there. Same for a Korean guy. Same for a Arabian guy. Same for a, name your non-white cultural ethnicity or tribe. And for some reason, you know, the Amish have escaped this. Let me tell you, you know, no one minds. Oh, I know why. I know why. The Amish have escaped being called racists. The Amish are supremely based for pursuing their interests, for protecting the interests of their Amish families, their Amish economies, their Amish churches, their Amish tribe, their Amish institutions. They serve, their whole point of their life is to serve the interests of their tribe, of their people, above all others. Now, the reason no one cares for it is because they have no integration. I was going to say they have no integration of other groups to have grievance. You know, there's no like black Amish who are being excluded. Dequarius is being excluded by Jacob. Let's have some ADL action. Like, no, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. So, but also you cannot become Amish, right? Like, we cannot become Amish. Whereas us whites, we have no in-group preference to start with. And I think that's why everybody squeals when we start picking up in-group preference, because it's like, no, like, you cannot pick up what the Amish already have. Maybe that's it. The Amish are too far gone with in-group preference, so that, you know, they're not letting any Dequarius Amish in. There are going to be no Dequarius Amish ever. Like, there will not be. And so I just think it's like, yeah, it's not enough to warrant going after them. And also here, okay, this is great to process. Thank you for processing with me, fine fellows. I appreciate the patience with my ADIQ processing. The Amish are not ashamed. The Amish are not ashamed of their interests. They're not ashamed of gatekeeping their interests. They're not ashamed of having an in-group. They're not ashamed of not letting anyone else in. They're not ashamed, and so they cannot be controlled by being called racist. Whereas us lily white boys, oh God, please don't call me racist, anything but that, please. Punish me. It's hilarious. You know, you will, if you're a white boy, you will be called racist regardless of how good you are as being an ally to the BIPOC. You will be called racist. And it works because the average white guy is so ashamed. He's so tribalist. He is so brainwashed that in-group preference is a sin. In-group preference is the devil. And it is. To our liberal culture, it is the greatest sin. In-group preference of white people, only white people, is the greatest sin to the liberal world order. All right. What a rabbit hole. Ulfric Durinsen. Welcome, fine sir. Every man, the head of his household. Praise God. Copper Star. The wife and I are watching the John Adams miniseries. They lock themselves in Independence Hall, hammering out the independence issue. Yeah. And praise God for it. You know, if they had dropped a bunch of ladies in there, oh my gosh, we would have had some trouble, let me tell you. Copper Star. Iron sharpens iron, but cuts through feathers and the soy. And remember, it cuts through soy. JHJ. I was watching Champions League football last week and both commentators were women. I watched on mute. Dude, I cannot. That is the ultimate humiliation, you know, because I'll watch rugby, European and South African rugby highlights and stuff. And it'll be exactly that. They'll have some harpy screeching. And it's never like a pleasant voice either. I mean, even if it were, you know, praise God, it's not. But even if it were, it would be wrong. But you get these women in an all-male space. Like, who watches sport? It's men. Why are they watching sport? It is an all-male space. It is testosterone. It is camaraderie. It is tribalism. It's a release of stress and of, you know, so you introduce a woman into it and it's like, what is a commentator? A commentator is in a position of authority over the viewer because they are a knowledgeable, you know, often they're an ex-player or an ex- you know, whatever, who have high status, they're very knowledgeable. And so, you know, if we went to a rugby match, imagine this, if you went to a soccer match or a rugby match or a football match with a bunch of your bros and some random guy with a beer next to you in the stand was like, Johnson has the ball now. He passes it off to Frank. You'd be like, dude, shut up. We're trying to watch the match, please. And be like, no, I'm telling you guys what's happening in front of your eyes. Bloody Johnson over there, he's just had his second child. Do you know that he's on contract for the next 5 years? Frank just bloody passed the ball. And it's like, dude, shut up. We don't care. But because it's now on the TV, with this, they've told you who your authorities are. It's like, I'm watching the game. Do I need someone to tell me what is happening in the game? No. But we've grown so accustomed we've been so groomed to putting the commentator, anybody on a TV, anybody on a radio, anybody on a stage has a position of authority. They have a microphone, they have a podium. They are in authority over me. They have status over me. And so I will listen. So what do? They take that built up capital and they insert a harpy in there to berate you and to humiliate you. It's a humiliation ritual. And you can't complain about it because then you are a misogynist or a racist or, you know, insert slur to keep you beaten down. Copper Star, I enjoy that your streams and your wife's videos are this personified. Well, praise God. Thank you, fine sir. You know, I tried to be anonymous once. I started out my Twitter life as some anonymous priestly boy yelling into the void. And I just realized I'm not big brain enough to have life-changing takes that people would look at an anonymous guy and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to follow this guy. My only skill is bravery. So that means having a personified thing. Ulfric Jurensen, racist is a Marxist slur created by Trotsky. That's not his real name, by the way. Ethno-nationalist is the proper term they try to convolute that with. Yeah, because if we spoke the truth, if someone had to come and call me an ethno-nationalist, like Scott's an ethno-nationalist, I'd be like, yeah, I am. Because it's the correct terminology. It's the correct, it encapsulates what I want. I want a homeland. I want sovereignty of my people in place. I want the sovereign cultural and political respect, reciprocity of my people in place. You know, it's coming from South Africa where you have 20 different tribes who are not sovereign. They are all trapped, enslaved in an economic zone that one tribe or one group or one, whatever you want to call them, has power over all these other groups. They can dictate culture to them. They can dictate all sorts of things to people who that is not reciprocity. That is not respectful. You know, everyone understands how evil it is for white people to have power over non-whites, you know, because how dare white people force their cultural norms onto non-white people? That's, you know, but it's like, oh, it's the same. It's the same for every group. Why would any group want to be enslaved or be beholden to another group's interests and have to serve another group's interests at the cost of our group's interests? You know, we want reciprocity. All we want is respect. All we want is reciprocity. So when you call someone an ethno-nationalist, it means they want nationhood for their tribe and tongue. They want nationhood for their tribe and tongue. Is that not reasonable? Is that not respectful to their tribe and tongue? You know, if there were 20 million blacks in America whose interests are not being met, whose culture is being disrespected, who are disadvantaged and aggrieved, and who have systemic oppression, would it not be loving and honoring to them to give them nationhood? Would it not be loving and respectful to them to give them cultural and political power, authority over their own people, over their own place? Why is it not the same for every other group, for every other tribe? That is the truth contained in the correct term, ethno-nationalist. And so you're 100%, that's a hugely good point there, Ulfric. Racist is a Marxist slur created by Trotsky. Ethno-nationalist is the proper term they try to convolute that with. Distracted workers, lack of productivity, and her sleeping with some on the line, I sent her away. Never again. It checks out, folks. This is real. You heard it here. This is real world testimonies, folks. You know, it's funny. I once coached a rugby side where the athletic trainer or the physio, whatever you want to call her, was this pretty blonde girl. And it was a mess. It was such a mess. Because she'd be at practice, at training, whatever you want to call it, midweek training, midweek practice. And all the guys, you know, because we had a pretty good system. Like the chaps would rock up, you'd boot up, and you'd go and get your skills. You'd start doing handling skills for the 20 minutes before practice, you know, before practice officially starts. You're booted up and you're doing handling skills. But when there's a pretty young blonde lady on the side of the field, let me tell you, there's not much handling skills going on. Send her away. Never again. Copper Star grabs Jacob by the collar. Look at me. I'm Amish now. Very good. Look at me. Look at me. I am Amish now. You know, it's funny as well, let us alone, that this whole idea of having pretty girls in all male spaces. You know, there is a place for beauty. There is a place for ladies to contribute their beauty. It energizes men, right? It's just not at the front line. It's back at home. You know, you fight for what's back at home. You don't want to be on the front line being distracted by woman's beauty. John Noel, it's so effeminate to be cowed by words like racist. Yeah, it shows you that you have no, that you are beholden to other people's approval for who you are. It shows you that you are feminized in that you fear most rejection from a group. When a masculine man is called a slur, you know, number one, it's not a identity thing. You know, that's, and this again comes from lack of all male space upbringing. You know, so in all male spaces, slurs are actually how you endear yourself to each other. You know, guys will call each other nicknames. They'll make fun of each other. They'll poke fun at things. They will mock things. And you learn to take it as a form of endearment. And then if the man can take it, if the man is confident, you know, that they called you some random name because of an attribute or something that you can't change, if you're okay with it and you laugh at yourself, then it's like, oh my gosh, that guy's confident. He's a Chad. He has grown in status in the group. In a feminized group, you know, you mock someone or slander someone or slur someone. Oh God, no, I'm telling mommy. You know, and you go and tell mommy because it's mean. And then mommy comes and punishes the other one. You know, and so you have this crazy passive aggressive appeal to authority, cancel other people, identity, you know, that so many men take on. You know, so for a lot of us, it's like when you get called racist, you're just like, you can laugh because you're like, I see what's going on here. I see what's happening. They're wanting us to fold. You know, when the new guy comes into the team, when a new guy comes onto the shop floor, when a new guy comes into the group, you're testing him. You want to see, does he fold? Is he trustworthy? Is he strong? Is he courageous? Is he competent? If he folds, you don't want him in the group, you know? And so it is with us on a civilizational scale. Our enemies are lobbing little things at us of like, is this guy controllable? Is this guy shameable? Is this guy weak? Don't call me racist, please. Ulfric. Oh, I'm well aware that it's actually Bronstein, brother. That's right. That's right. Copper Star, I have an uncle who was a skinhead with bolts tattered on his arm, who dropped me off at school. They never had a chance for me to care about being called racist. That's right, sir. You had the advanced class. JHJ, Vox says racist was first used for American Indians who wanted to retain their cultural identity. Yeah, exactly that again. You know, it's men who want to retain their interests, their interests for their people and their place. It is a tool. It's a great tool. I mean, it's no one is more proficient at finding social, feminized social tools for subversion and destruction than communists, Bolsheviks, you know. Trotsky, Bronstein, his tactic destroyed a people group. You know, it was phenomenal. He found the kryptonite of a people group. Not anymore, Bronstein. All right, let me read some sweet tweets. Let's get back to the whole reason we had this chat. Scotch Cuban, we had this chat last night. It was very illuminating. I appreciate it. I see Twitter as one of the last remaining all-male spaces where we can speak somewhat freely, which is dangerous, amongst like-minded brothers. So iron sharpens iron, etc. You know, and I was thinking about this, and I was like, but what about Gab, Scott? And I was like, yeah, like we want that to be Gab. The problem with Gab is there is no danger involved. There's no danger involved of, you know, because I think that's the great, like, power of Twitter is that there are so many libs here. You know, half the fun of Twitter is the danger of societal conflict. Allowing women into any space brings with them moderation and political correctness of speech, i.e. safety. They want safety as their priority. Also, there was a great quote back in the day of the Manosphere forums about there are no women online. Ladies know that they'll get attention just for being in a male space due to their beauty or even just a possibility of sex. It's why blonde media girls can say the blandest things but get thousands of likes. White knights are simping her, not her ideas or experiences. So this is a funny one, you know, with like blonde media girls and ministry babes and whatnot. A lot of their ideas, you know, are like milquetoast, boomer con, pithy things that like, you know, some midwit, or let's give them the benefit of the doubt, some big brain said, you know, said this line, and he got like 3 or 4 likes because no one cared. But some blonde media babe said it, and now all of a sudden 1,000 likes. You know, if an anonymous poster had posted that thing, or if just an average guy had posted that thing, would it have been as powerful? That's your gauge. Not because some pretty girl said it, and now 1,000 white knights come in to like and share and, you know, please notice me. It's a very interesting, you know, because even a lot of guys, you know, I look at a lot of guys are like, yeah, there shouldn't be women in ministry. You know, there shouldn't be women as pastors leading the church, et cetera, et cetera. But they're more than fine for women to go and be journalists, women to go be lawyers, women to go be politicians, women to go be media influencers and all this stuff. And it's like, chaps, you have to understand that all the dynamics are the same. They're all public domains. They're all public contentious domains. And so like it is in the church where, you know, if a woman is preaching, it's a shame to the man. It's like, was there no man who could preach? Was there no man who could lead? Was there no man who could be doing this? It's a shame to the men in that congregation. Likewise with reporters. Like if you're relying on female reporters to break stories, on female reporters to confront power, on female reporters to do the work, it's like, it's a shame to all the male journalists. Like, are there no men who could break the story? Are there no men who could do this investigative work? It's a shame to the men. You know, and then this really comes to the last point of this. Elevating ladies into public leadership or influence isn't just bad for the church, but for every domain. These ladies become the contentious woman that Proverbs warns about. You know, if our goal is to restore civilization by having wholesome families, by having family be the first institution, all of these women who go into public leadership, into public work, are becoming men. They are having to become masculine. They are, instead of taking care and first priority of the home, of the household, of taking care and first priority of being a helpmeet to a high-value husband, they are out trying to be high-value. They are out on a mission and contending with the enemy. And it's like, that's why so many modern Christian marriages are in trouble, because it's a contentious wife. You know, the wife wants to contend at the gate. And then she just becomes the contentious woman that Proverbs says, like, it's better to go live on the corner of the house, buddy, than with this lady. And so it's not just a marriage that men don't like contentious women. It's like, it's in every aspect of life. Like no masculine man has time for a contentious woman. Gents, do not simp nor contend with these women. Keep your domains dangerous. We have clowns to crush. You know, half the problem is us. It's the same thing with the racist thing, is us allowing women to contend. You know, so many guys are like, Beth Moore should be canceled, and I would never, you know, allow a woman to preach over me and all this kind of stuff. Yet they outrage and give her views and give her energy and give her attention and all this stuff. It's like, chaps, it's like, if you find out that a church has a woman preacher, don't go there. You know, if you find out that you have to repeal the 19th in your heart. You have to repeal the 19th in your institutions. You know, what do you have power over? Don't do that with what you have power over, and then you're fine. You don't have to outrage. You know, it's like, I don't give any time of day to media babes and boss babes and ministry babes or whatever. It's like, you don't affect my life. Like, there is nothing in my life that is submitted to your authority and your leadership. It's as easy as that. And so it is for us. Like, we must not simp to women. You know, so often the reason many men simp to women is because she happens to be the gatekeeper to your next promotion or status level or whatever, you know, being in that she is the daughter of your boss or the wife of your boss or the whatever. And it's like that, you know, it's understandable. But don't contend. Don't simp. Don't contend. Just do your work. Just do your work as unto the Lord. Don't simp for ladies, but also don't contend. Like if a woman wants to contend with you, it's like, I don't contend. I don't fight ladies, you know. Now, obviously, there's going to come a time where like crazy ladies are going to come after your interest. They're going to come after your institutions and stuff. Of course, fight them. That's fine. Like I'm not saying, but I'm saying like people who are within your spheres, people who are within your domains, you don't want to contend with women. Just crush. Just go do your work. Just avoid. Ignore woman, make science. Alrighty. So where was I going with all of this? So that's saying that there are no women online. We need to apply this to leadership. There are no women in leadership. And it's like, of course there's women in leadership. There's one right there. And it's like, no, what we mean by this is functionally, she is no longer a woman. Functionally, she is operating as a man in leadership. Functionally, she is taking on the masculine energy to perform leadership. There are no women in leadership. And then you'll be very proud of my Luddite ways. I have figured out how to use Telegram. So I am on Telegram at either Courage My Lads or Scott Tange. So look me up, gentlemen. Shoot me a message. It's a great way to keep in touch, I am told. So it'll be very great. And then I've started a channel, Courage My Lads Pub. So I'll figure out how to use that. And then maybe we have a private group or so from that. I think that'll be very edifying to us. So I will figure that out. And let's give it a bash. Eh? I literally had to look up on YouTube how to use Telegram. Someone had to very kindly, some Indian gentleman had to very kind. So then you download the app and then you come over here and you click on channel. It was something to the effect of that. Thank you, Raj. Very cool. John, women in the workplace is an issue, but I have always had less of an issue with women as secretaries, admins, versus when they become peers with men. It is completely changing the work. It completely changes the workplace. Yeah, it's exactly this. A woman can be very honoring and feminine. You know, this is the phenomenon of the work wife. You know, but a lady who understands, like, there's a high status man, I'm going to be his helpmeet. I'm not going to contend with him. I'm not going to compete with him. You know, and this is the huge problem is when women start competing, we will soon figure this out. Oh, look at this. Ah, Scotch Cuban. Very practical guy, let me tell you. That's very great. We're connected now. Drongo, Raj, the YouTube Indian. Is perennial friend of all Luddites. Man, he has helped me out so many times. Copstar, using an Indian to get it done. How very Anglo of me. Well, you see, the sepoys are very grateful to have me on the subcontinent. It's rather hot in here. Can we get some fanboys, please? The first fanboys were Indian. Very good. Well, gentlemen, I praise God. I bless all of you. Have a wonderful day further. I hope all of you who have a bit of dirt outside your back door are planting things in it. It's going to be a wonderful season ahead. And I have a feeling that having some potatoes in the ground is just going to be wonderful. And I may have to do some garden updates as things go along. I'm going to try and propagate these arborvitae, however you say it. Got a bunch of them around. We're renting, so what a wonderful thing to do for when we eventually do get property is to have a bunch of arborvitae ready to plant. The wardrobe, welcome, fine late sir. Well, gentlemen, I bless you all. May the Lord be praised, and we will see you tomorrow.